있다. 그게 미완 때문에 타인이기때 수술 교육교리야 아니 영화인데 다 신도네 고교 신도 고교는 뭐 송열했을 때 즉 참으실지 내 충성실지 교육이 말했을 때 수술 교육
쇼겐단다 숙세지 탐백이 이 시대 속으로 수술 교육 So we have briefly talked about sensory direct perceptions, or what we call wangun in Tibetan. And I also told you there is yingun, or mental direct perception, or perceiver. And usually, the fundamental condition for mental direct perception is its own previous moments, right? Mind is a continuity. It has many moments. So the preceding moment acts as what we call fundamental conditioning factor for the subsequent moments of mental perception or consciousness. That being said, there's also mention of how in the case of, not in the case of ordinary beings, but that's what I'm talking about, is that sometimes how visual consciousness can also, give rise to a mental consciousness perception. It's something like, you know, visible forms we see through our visual consciousness, and then that visual consciousness or the perception, it acts as a conditioning factor that gives rise to, mental consciousness perceiving the form. Okay, and that mental consciousness could, in a sense, is a subtle. It's a subtle, form of consciousness.
Oh, tende de ta je sukshin ge shiva, ane je ongol de ne suk, ane je yu de chen ge shiva je da, ane je da yin yi ge ongol de ne su yi de chen ge shiva ni ge na ne, an tende de ge wo da je susuki wi ge le ya da je da yin yi ge ongol de ne su yi de chen ge de shiva de. 기인도상의 계단 한 적이 거라서는 저는 즉 그게 가인데는 가이들의 민이게 아니 가이들 증에게 즉 미세와대 그징가래 망을 그징가면도 기기면은 그징가의 죽도 테마타 축점이셔니 기기야 말해서 다들
네
이문데 인데 이문 근데 이문데 수수기위 결단이 신드네 아니 고교 어디 유리한 대 속도하고 근데 저와체도 저기토고야 말해서 거기
It said that, let's say, our ordinary visual consciousness perceiving that cup, let's assume that it's going to stay for 5 moments only. Okay? So what could happen is, as our visual consciousness perceives this cup for the next 5 moments or 5 seconds, then the last second of that could give rise to a very momentary or transitory mental consciousness perceiving the cup. But that is so subtle and so momentary, you know. And even though it's something we as ordinary people could experience it, but it's such a subtle, consciousness that it is one of those what we call very concealed or hidden phenomena. Remember, we talk about manifest forms of phenomena, slightly hidden or concealed form of phenomena, and very hidden or concealed form of phenomena. So this is something that we as ordinary people could experience, but it's very subtle and very momentary, you know.
What does that? The law of Hawaii Gulina, the day you meet the initial Goku Regoma, you the Tower Seto Yoris, go eat some to Yoris.
But in the case of transcendental beings, or what you call the Aryas, okay, Aryas are those in the footnote who perceive the ultimate reality as it is directly. So in their case, they could also experience. This mental consciousness being conditioned by their visual consciousness, but it's not going to be subtle. For them, they know. You see, they realize that their mental consciousness is perceiving the form. So in the case of ordinary beings, so that momentary mental consciousness conditioned by visual consciousness is really subtle.
That in the valley, ani, the yingu valley, that is, okay, rangri musum singi deres, rangri musum singi de, na sheba thamje ge, na ko, ani nonge ki sheba chere de deres, pugar ya, ani that to so bena su singi ge, ani mixi si na, the yamsum yongi su singi sheba khoran, ani pugar tongi ge, ani.
And then remember I said there is what we call a perception or self-knowing direct perceiver, rangrik in Tibetan. Rang means seeing yourself. Rangrik means you see it yourself. So what we're really talking about here is that according to those who accept that there is such thing as self-knower, or the wrong ring of perception, every perception or consciousness has, you know, a self-knower. So which means when our visual consciousness perceives a form, then there is a perception that perceives the visual consciousness itself. Okay, so it's just like a visual consciousness perceives a form, but then there's another sort of a, you know, part of a mind that perceives itself, the subjective mind itself.
What the Josanza Aranzu Nashakin do get that Chamba Chamba Chen Yaka, that she was so old, that Ranjik Suranjukutan and Tanya Yoris.
One of the things that we often talk about is a mindfulness or temba, remembrance or recollection. Okay. So actually, it is the self knower or rangrik that really induces recollection or mindfulness.
What rangrik done at times that tongue dunk and the tongue or asana, then at that shop where also so tanda combal that's a church sugar and then chilotine, and she yay yun to us in a method, and the star was tombina, and tanda tanda that tanda negos this summon tambinata.
So let's assume that after your lunch, when you were coming back to the monastery here, on the way you saw, now you're thinking like, maybe I saw a flower or something on the way. Okay. But you don't know what kind of a flower. Okay. So in which case, this recollection of the mindfulness you have, why it's kind of a little fuzzy, if you will, is because your self-knower really did not register, you know, the flower well at that time. If your self-knower, when you perceive that flower on the way, if the self-knower of that perception registered it really well, but right now you will be able to recollect exactly what kind of a flower did you see, or whatever the color, everything. Okay. So when we recollect something, but we really are not sure about the specificities of the recollection, right? Yeah, I kind of saw a flower, you know, but I don't know what kind of flower, whatever. That means our self-knower or our perception at that time, it really did not work out effectively. Okay. So if our self-knower works effectively, then we will have, you know, good recollection or the mindfulness or the remembrance. Okay.
What then just on that? Rang and it's a Rangri, Rang and Yong Jay, she would take it, and you let our carriage over the top of the question who we are. Yes. On question, Yahushin, and Chamber Jen to we are.
Yes.
Yong Jay, she would take our chair, the Kuya, Wushin, Matona, Chamber the Dang to we are modest.
So the point I'm trying to make here is when a self knower or a perception Rangri does not register clearly what was experienced by your perception, then usually we are not able to have a good recollection or remembrance of things. Okay? But when our self-knower or the a perception that perceives the whatever things we perceive, then later we are able to recollect them really well.
Okay. That's right.
Now, this is not only something that we may experience during the wakeful state of the mind, right? You know, we kind of remember something we saw, but then we really don't remember exactly what happened. But even in the dreaming stage, you know, sometimes we have those fuzzy dreams, we kind of experience something, then we really don't know what really happened, you know, when we wake up. It's the same thing, the self-knower or the perception wrongly, you know, that experience, the dream state, did not really work out well. So in the morning when we wake up, we knew we dreamt about something, you know, then we really don't know what did we really dream about. Okay, so it works in both wakeful states and in the dreaming states. So what I've just talked about is, you know, how certain recollection we call tenpa, it could be translated mindfulness, can be induced by what we call sensory direct perceptions, such as eye consciousness or the visual consciousness seeing something. But when it sees something, our perception of the self-knower does not register it clearly, then we kind of recollect something, but we don't know what it really was. Okay. But then we can also talk about recollection or mindfulness that is induced by conceptual perception or consciousness. Okay. And in which case, it's very possible that in the beginning, our recollection is very clear, right? We remember what experience. But then as time goes on, slowly, slowly, you know, it just kind of fades. You know, now we really don't remember what did we really see or experience. Okay. Now, this kind of a declining recollection, if you will, or mindfulness, it has more to do with the power of familiarity with that mindfulness. If we somehow remember the thing over and again, we generate that familiarity with what we have experienced, then our recollection, you know, could stay clear. But once we don't lose that kind of a familiarization process, then slowly, slowly, you know, our recollection declines, and then we don't remember well. Originally, we remembered it so well, and now it started to fade away.
Okay.
So if we want to really have a clear recollection or the mindfulness of what we've experienced conceptually, then we really need to familiarize ourselves with that recollection or maintain it. Okay? Here's an example that we cultivate, say, compassion or bodhicitta. Okay? So the more we familiarize ourselves with the focus of bodhicitta or the love or compassion, when we maintain that, then this kind of the process of familiarization, it helps us to sharpen, if you will, the upper perception of the self-knower of this experience, so we are able to maintain the clear recollection later on. But when we stop familiarizing ourselves with the focus of love and compassion, bodhicitta, that upper perception, it kind of dwindles down, if you will, you know, and then slowly, slowly, our recollection fades away. Yeah, so that's why we often stress the importance of familiarizing ourselves with love and compassion, or cultivating, as sometimes I would love to say, intimacy more and more with love, compassion, and bodhicitta. Let me give you, some more examples to illustrate my point. That's when we go to schools and we learn about things, you know, sometimes we know we learn things very easily. It's like, yeah, I know it's very easily, you know, it's a piece of cake, that's what we say. Well, pretty soon the piece of cake is no more in the mind, you know, we forgot it. And so what is really happening is, at the beginning it's easy to kind of learn about things, then we have really not developed, if you will, the power of familiarization with the subject matter or whatever the case may be, then pretty soon we forget it. But other times, at the beginning, we find it so difficult to understand things. So we make a lot of efforts, you know, we concentrate, we make efforts. But once we learn it, it stays with us much better. Because what happens in the process of this, we have familiarized ourselves more with what we study, the things, and so our power of familiarization kicks in, and the recollection, it works much better. So from that point of view, what we can see is when we go to schools, right, I mean the teachers, you know, maybe give you assignments, or you have to do, you know, study period. All of these things are what are called modern methods, but this is the way to kind of cultivate your mindfulness, right, through assignments and through self-study periods. What you're really trying to basically do is trying to familiarize yourself with the subject matter so that you remember them better. Of course, in the Buddhist context of practice, we talk about all of these things relating to development of bodhicitta, or the wisdom realizing emptiness as it is. And so when we cultivate bodhicitta, relatively speaking, maybe it's easier to cultivate bodhicitta than understanding or gaining realization in emptiness as it is. But then once we have cultivated bodhicitta, we really need to maintain it, right? We need to generate the power of mindfulness, you know, and there's a maintenance that's involved in keeping the bodhicitta. So that's why we are strongly advised to engage in the bodhisattva actions and activities. So by doing that, you know, we're able to maintain our bodhicitta attitude or the motivation. And somehow down the line, if we feel like as we're engaging in activities, if we kind of lose the sense of the whole vision of bodhicitta, and we feel like, you know what, well, I can't do it anymore. There are too many sentient beings or whatever, right? That's not going to work out or something. So when we kind of lose that sense of the vision, then we can lose the bodhicitta easily, and then we can easily fall back into the selfish, self-cherishing attitudes and selfishness. We can easily kind of plunder into there. So this is how things are explained in the Buddhist context of practices, how we need to maintain our bodhicitta and any other attitude we cultivate positive.
Yes.
In contrast, to realize emptiness, even to understand it, we need to make a lot of efforts, because it's not easy to understand emptiness or shunyata. So that requires a lot of concentration, a lot of efforts. But when we put so much effort and concentration into understanding emptiness, and when we really realize it, then it kind of sticks with us. It's really hard to lose the realization of emptiness. Okay, because what has happened, as I said, the more we have invested ourselves in understanding emptiness or realizing emptiness through concentration and efforts, we have generated so much power of familiarization with it that once we realize emptiness as it is, it is hard to lose it. Whereas we can easily lose bodhicitta, So once you realize emptiness, having invested so much into realizing it, then it really sticks with you. And the example that one could give it is just like, you have a very valuable thing that you cherish it so much, and then you put it in a very secure place, and then you often check it, is it there or not. So then maybe you could put a security lock system, whatever, so it's really there. So it's that kind of thing, that once you realize emptiness, it really stays with you. It is, hard to lose.
Yes.
The mindfulness or recollection could be kicked out by many different factors. For example, let's assume that we really paid a good attention to say something. Let's say we saw a house, and somehow nearby that house we saw, I don't know why did we see it, but some dogs and cows and whatever. Okay, but we have really registered it very well. So the next time when we see the house, as soon as we see the house, that could induce in us the recollection of, oh, I remember seeing a dog there or a cow there. That recollection of the house also somehow induces the recollection of the dogs and the cats and the cows.
Okay.
So that's the kind of recollection that works through the association with each other. Let me give another example to make the same point here. Let's say that someone introduced his or her friend to us. Okay, And then, you know, some time goes by, and then we see that friend. And we have this experience, we are not sure who is this person. We kind of remember seeing this person before, right? That's called a null among us. Something appeared to your mind, but it did not, you did not register it. Remember one of the perceptions we talked about earlier? Okay. Something appeared to your mind, but you don't know, you know, the phenomenon. But then as soon as the person says, you know, do you remember me? You know, your friend so-and-so, you know, as soon as the other person mentions the name of your friend, then you're like, yeah, right, now I remember you. See how that, by association, you know, recollection or the tenva could be induced or generated. So what I'll just explain, you know, it really present it from the perspective of middle way school of thought or the Madhyamikan system, I think, which has a far superior way of explaining how recollection of mindfulness can be induced by many things. In other schools of Buddhist schools of thought, because remember Buddhism has many different schools of tenets or the thoughts, in the lower schools of thought, you know, sometimes in somewhere they might say, okay, every perception has an apperception or a self-knower, right? And then they explain it just through that. If the self-knower works well, then you remember something. If the self-knower messes it up, then you get messed up, you know, or whatever the case may be. But the Madhyamikan philosophers say, you know, yeah, there are self-knower, but we only don't have to necessarily depend on that only, one self-knower. You could depend on other factors, you know, such as we said, by association, you can remember things. Like, okay, first you don't remember the person, then the person says, I'm a friend of your friend, da-da-da, right? Then you say, oh, yeah, now I remember it, you know, so how it, the recollection can be kicked in.
Yes.
So the people or the schools of thought within Buddhism who propound or who say that there is what's called self-knower or apperception, rangri, and the whole purpose behind this is to say, you know, this is the way we remember things. If there is no apperception, hello, then how do we remember things? That's what they say, you know. Now, another direct perception that we talk about is called the yogic direct perceptions, or I said that arises from meditation, just to kind of try to simplify it, because if yogic sounds too mystic here. Now, this is the kind of direct perception that arises by the power of what are called meditative stabilization, or some of this could be calm abiding shamatha, and special insight or vipassana. So when you integrate those two things, calm abiding and special insight, or vipassana and shamatha, then due to that meditative state, you could experience a yogic direct perception. And of course, this only exists in the minds of transcendental beings. You know, we as ordinary beings don't have it. You know, once you become a transcendental being, then you could experience that kind of a, what are called yogic.
Yogic metabo tobe ni shiro king gore shiro king de shiro de anche kunzela tengi ge ni che andara jeba chago yores
no. Now we as ordinary people can of course start the process of yogic direct perception and cultivate it. You know, for example, let's say you know, we want to realize you know, impermanence. Yeah. And so what happens is we try to mentally engage in impermanence. So that is what we call yijie, mental engagement. Remember I mentioned this mind before. So what a mental engagement does is it kind of gives us a sense of what impermanence is. We really don't realize what it is, you know, but we get a sense of what it is, okay, koa in Tibetan. So then through this mental engagement, you know, we try to have to sharpen our understanding, and which gives rise to the wisdom realizing impermanence, you know, as it is. Now this wisdom is, as a matter of fact, is what we call inferential valid cognition. Okay, so the mental engagement induces the inferential valid cognition that understands, you know, impermanence.
What in the Veda, so the Gugula in Jova, and the Metagota Veda, and the law, and the Ba Samadhi, and the Jung Sung Wolyan. Pasala Yudang, using the Pasala logic, such came with yours. Benatat, Jig Nazu, Jig Jazz Hosilia, and Lava June to Zanga, and Tapsi, two Gonyerum, Tinka Gonyerum, Joe Gonyum, Tilly Joe Gonyum, that the descendant should who yours again. Didn't she lot talk what they get in it? Yana Yan the Kumjit in the Tunjit in it, said words, Tunjit in Shayati, Lutti in Nuati, Sayati, Chung 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 Chung.
So in the case of, say, impermanence, when we said we ordinary beings don't know what impermanence is, okay, in the footnote, I must add a footnote here, that means we really don't know what the subtle impermanence is. Okay. So that's what we are saying. We're not saying you don't know what the house is falling down or collapsing or anything like that. We're not talking about that. Subtle impermanence, momentary disintegration. Okay, footnote closed. So, otherwise we may not be making any sense to you. And so first we mentally engage ourselves with impermanence as our object. And the mental engagement, as I said, it gives us a sense of what impermanence is, but we really don't realize what it is. We don't have the real understanding or the realization here. And so once this mental engagement, you know, it induces that understanding of impermanence based upon reasoning, then we have an inferential valid understanding or cognition of what impermanence is, subtle impermanence is. Okay. Now, through meditation practice, this inferential valid understanding of impermanence can be transformed into yogic direct perception of impermanence. Okay, how does that work? To understand this, let me again remind you, remember I explained to you this morning the difference between how direct perceptions and conceptual perceptions approach the objects very differently. Okay? Conceptual perception sees its object through the image of the object. There is the intermediary factor here. Okay? Remember the example I gave you? You know, if we picked up our cup by our bare hand, we have a direct sensation of what is in the cup. Is it the hot water or the cold water, whatever it is. But if it's too hot, then we need to put on the gloves to pick up our cup, which means we feel the sensation, but it's intermediary factor, right? We really don't know it directly. So the conceptual perceptions or the consciousnesses, they do not see their objects directly, but they see the objects through the intermediary of the images. We call the generic images, or the tunji in Tibetan, of the objects. Okay. So when we have inferential valid understanding of what impermanence is, it is a correct understanding, But it is still not direct understanding, perception. It is still conceptual and through the image of what impermanence is. Now through meditation practice, right, we familiarize ourselves more and more with this inferential valid understanding of impermanence. In the process of this meditation, what is happening is, it is as if we are peeling off these layers of generic images of the impermanence. Okay? So when finally we are able to remove this generic image, the intermediary factor from the whole thing, now our inferential valid understanding becomes the direct understanding of what impermanence is. Are you with me? So now we can see the impermanence nakedly, directly as it is. We don't need that generic image thing, that conceptual thing in between us. But that could only happen through the meditation process, right? Through meditation, we peel off this the levels of generic images of impermanence. Am I coming through clearly here? Yeah? Okay. Oh, yeah.
Is it the direct perception about emptiness? Is it the subtle of emptiness?
Is it the direct perception of?
Yeah, emptiness. Is the subtle of the emptiness.
What do you mean by subtle of the emptiness?
What is the most subtle about emptiness? When you meditation about emptiness, what is the most subtle about emptiness? Is it the direct perception?
Oh, you mean what is the most subtle experience of emptiness? Okay, okay. Tapi nanti ni lagi jawab ini seru lagi. Nanti ni kita, nanti to, to dalam mungkin seru lagi. Tapi kita cakap benda kena sama dengan macam mita apa lagi. Ini mungkin tu to dalam dah, tu tinggi suku to dalam seru lagi. Ini kalau sebab nanti lagi jawab ini, nanti tak to apa nanti to dalam tasha seru macam apa lagi kita. Tapi tasha itu kandar macam apa lagi. Tapi mungkin to itu macam apa lagi.
Tapi kandar nasi mita apa jawab nasi, tapi ringkas le to dalam cik boleh tu jadi.
Nampak.
Ada nanti. That don't you get the that just so what the that musum chaga yaris number shung nalaya musum singu lo de jik don't you get the lo shi kewe ne tomar tang yung yi de musum lo musum jik tang yung go yaris taro ane jik san kewe ne gozo no musum lo tog de yaris tang tar lo de tomar tan tamakang lo musum lo tog go yaris jesan lo musum singu yi de jik ganda ta ko 르고난에다 로튼드빈난에 르다 저거도 고쳐가 열었어.
Now the thing that I've been explaining to you with regard to impermanence, you know, we can juxtapose that, or we can, how should I say, transpose that, if you will, to understand emptiness. Okay. So in the case of emptiness, also, first we understand emptiness through its generic image, which is the inferential valid understanding of what emptiness is. Then through the process of meditation, right, we started to kind of peel off these layers of conceptuality with regard to emptiness. And when all those images is completely removed or gone, then we perceive emptiness directly, nakedly as it is. And so this is, in a some fun sense, the final realization of what emptiness is. Okay? Now, whether this is called subtle or not, I think depends upon the level of your consciousness. But mentally, when we realize emptiness directly, this is what called sort of a final realization of what emptiness is. In Buddhism, what we often talk about is when we try to verify whether things exist or reality exists or not, we really rely on direct valid perceptions. If the direct valid perceptions can verify existence of things or phenomena, then really we can't go wrong. That's how it exists. And our also hope is finally when we become Buddhas, our hope is that all our perceptions become direct valid perceptions, right? That's what it is. Okay? So we want to be able to experience all levels of realities directly, non-conceptually. This is where it happens in the state of Buddhahood.
Okay. Shenyiga Shiva Musum, Ongo Musum, Same Tanku Yoris, Hitting, and Yigu Musum, Sukti Kalaya, and Tambatu Matu, and Chick Jenny, Doyendin, Vilia, and Chick Coaching Yi, and then Jeva Chet, Coyni, and Wotona, and Shine, and Chick Lu Pigalia, Yig Lotte, and Yiju Motu Yoris. Ta Yiju Lotte, Kumti Yana 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 嗯，这到位了，经营就怎么？你七八层面我做过了是。 제바 참아도 로데 군지 안에 양도 양된데 뒤 튠지도 쎄서는 나는 무슨 원조 되고 여래스.
So let me do this whole thing one more time with regard to realizing emptiness of a form. Yeah, because we know form is emptiness, right? So what happens is, first, it is the direct perceiver of a form that has to function, right? You perceive a form. And that may induce in your mind this mental perception of the emptiness of a form. Okay. So as we mentally engage with this emptiness of a form, the more we familiarize with this mental engagement, which is a state of mind, in Tibetan called yichu, okay, the more and more we cultivate it, then we get a better sense of what emptiness of a form is. It's still not the realization, but we know this, you know, this is what it is. You know, it's kind of a better sense of it. But as we work more and more with this mental engagement through meditation and through reasoning and analysis, then that mental engagement can give rise to the inferential valid understanding of the emptiness of a form. Okay, this is the correct understanding of the emptiness of the form. So it is still inferential. We are seeing emptiness through the image of what emptiness is. Now through consistent meditation, right, we try to sort of, familiarize more and more with emptiness of the form, and we, in the process, we eliminate or remove the generic image of the emptiness of the form. So whenever we succeed in doing that, all the images of the form is gone. Now our inferential valid understanding of emptiness has transformed into this direct realization or understanding of emptiness as it is. Now this is where we experience emptiness directly, non-conceptually, and what we call nakedly as it is. Okay, there's nothing between emptiness and our realization or perception of emptiness.
Yes.
So what I also want to make it clear here is, as we look at this process of realizing the emptiness of a form, nakedly or non-conceptually, as we go through the process, that inferential valid understanding of emptiness and the later direct understanding of emptiness, they are part of the same continuity of the mind. It is not like two different, you know, sets of mind, you know, are operating here. It is just the same mind, you know, the continuity of the mind that is still functioning here, that at the beginning it is the inferential valid understanding, slowly in the later continuity of the mind, it transforms into direct perception of emptiness.
I have a question.
Yes.
Are you saying poem or form?
A form, like the visible forms. F-O-R-M, forms.
Form.
Yeah, forms.
Okay.
Yeah.
What I'm equating to is when I write a poem, and I go over it and over it and over it, and I find that it's something about the past.
Okay.
And by doing that, I'm repeating the experience until I find things out in my past that I've completely forgotten.
And
I kind of look at it that way too.
I
kind of equated with that.
Okay.
That in that way.
Okay. 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 Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay.
The process in a way is, I think, it's kind of working in the same way, depending upon, you know, it doesn't matter what subject matters or forms we're talking about. You know, we are dealing with the visible forms, but it could be the poems that thing, you know. Let's say in the beginning, if somebody wants to learn about, you know, how to compose poems or so forth, make a lot of efforts to do that. But the power of that investment and the familiarization, then you remember, you know, the things, but better, and as you reflect on your poems over and again, then you start to remember things you didn't remember before, right? The process works in the same way. It's just a different focus, you know, you use it. And here I would like to share, my own kind of experience studying Buddhist metaphysics at monastic universities, how we go to teachers for instructions. But oftentimes, teachers really don't give you the answers, and they pose so many issues and problems, okay? And they don't give you any conclusive evidence and say, this is what hell it is, And so they raise many doubts and issues and all kinds of, things. It's like open up. And they'll say, from the prohibitory point of view, perception, there are things like this. So there could be pros and cons here. Like they kind of point out those things. Then from the complementary perspective, there are things like this. So they just kind of, raise the issues and things like that. And so then could be paradoxes. They don't give you answers how to, address those paradoxes. So then what happens is, we really get interested into why are things like that? They seem to be contradicting each other, and this, it's really not making sense. And then we go to the debate, and we debate over it, and then we think about it like that. Then later, we remember things so well. But when the teacher spoon feed us, this is how it is, then we think, yeah, that's easy, yeah, okay. That's what he said, it is, yeah. What is there to think about? Then next time, you don't remember anything, because he spoon fed you already, right? You don't have to work at it. And so I think these kind of things happen, how the more we invest into thinking and reflection and meditation, the much better we remember, later on. So our recollection kind of kicks in much better. So in our monastic schools, it seems like there's this kind of a tradition where the teachers are encouraged not to give the real answers, to the students. The students are allowed to discover. You kind of raise the issues and you show the pros and cons of different issues and then let them debate and reflect on and find out the answers. They don't give you the answers. But only time where some kind of exception is, let's say we are preparing for really big debates of life or something, right? Then you go to that so many issues and complexity and everything, so you go to your teachers, okay, now how to do this? Then maybe they make a little exception, something, okay, this is what it is, really, exactly. Because you have to sit in big, debate over your life, So then they kind of a little bit show you, but usually they don't, So the point I made earlier is that when we look at this whole process, the mental process of either realizing subtle impermanence, directly at the end, or the emptiness directly at the end, what's happening is it's the same continuity of the mind. It's not like two different, you know, mindsets with the different continuities operating in you. It's the same continuity of the mind that's functioning in us, but at a certain level, you know, what we could only do is we have this inferential understanding of emptiness or the impermanence, and then through meditation, you know, that transforms into direct perception or experience of subtle impermanence or, you know, emptiness. Impermanence of emptiness. Now, this kind of process we're talking about could also work in the, with the antithetical set of minds as well.
What in the sense? Ani je tungi tobe ani je ba thege pge meva soya ge ani tinzin te da ani je tungi tobe ani je ungusum je ba thege wali ke ya ungusum thege meva soya ge ani kanta me dojo tinzin tinzin meva soda ante kaga ye te res pge.
So when I say that, you know, how this might work with this, antithesis of these other minds, you know, which becomes like, whoa, so what was that? Now, what I'm really trying to say is, you know, in the case of like now, realizing emptiness, we have this grasping at true existence of things, right? That's the point we want to get rid of. So the grasping at true existence that is tackled by the inferential valid understanding of emptiness, and the grasping at self at a different level that is tackled by the direct understanding of emptiness are very different in how they can tackle the same issue but very differently. Okay.
What did they say? They say about the any the changbe and long musum and the musum the and that is tangbo da and the nebo res. The nebo so and the nebo so ya ve and the city tungi the ve and the chebage and Tinsidi, Mava Condes saw your asana, Lot the Wilson, and get you with your matters. Lotte, the Wilson, you sang and came much over cook, cook up the cook and mouse with your is. Sebatic.
So when we generate the inferential understanding of emptiness, you know, what it really does is it somehow prevents the grasping at true existence to pop up. And it's kind of clamming it down, and it doesn't allow the grasping at true existence,
you know, to arise.
Inferential understanding of emptiness, as I said, it prevents the grasping from arising in us, but more specifically, it is tackling with the intellectually developed grasping at true existence. Okay, there's intellectual form and innate form of grasping. So the inferential understanding of emptiness, it is counteracting the intellectual, you know, aspect of the grasping itself. Okay, intellectual aspect of the grasping itself. And it prevents that grasping from arising. It's not cutting its continuity. It's not severing the continuity of this grasping, but it's kind of, okay, I won't let it come up, you know, just kind of pounding on its head as if, you know. But the direct realization of emptiness, okay, what it really does is it's really counteracting the very innate grasping itself that it wants to sever. It wants to kind of disrupt the whole continuity of this innately developed grasping. Okay, that's how it is tackling the grasping here.
Yes. Kunda kyunchima kyaga da sabente koko tobe ne mevso yoris mevso nda tine ya ani yangara tinzil hengi mevso ya ko zoris tine da se tewa chimbu kone lang sarang ga namsha ton do ne sachu chya to da ti ton ne tinzin chala ma go yue to gi no satlan to jen ne tamya yewa chadan ne jong gusum to do kang ton ten ne jong gores.
So what's happening is that you know, inferential understanding of emptiness, it tackles the intellectual aspect of the grasping at true existence, right? It's just kind of a clamming it down. It won't let it arise. But it's not really disrupting its continuity. It's not severing it, you know, or it's not tearing it apart, if you will. But then when that inferential understanding of emptiness gives rise to the direct understanding of emptiness, this direct understanding of emptiness, now first it has to tackle with the intellectual aspect of the grasping. The way it does is, it wants to poke into it and it wants to disrupt its continuity. Yeah? As it keeps on doing that, then now the intellectual aspect of the grasping is gone, but then the innate aspect of the grasping is still there, right? Now it has to deal with the innate aspect of the grasping at true existence. And so what it wants to do is it wants to disrupt the continuity of the innate aspect of the grasping itself. So this is why in Buddhism we talk about the 10 spiritual grounds of bodhisattvas. Because this innate aspect of the grasping, right, we have to deal with it. So we say, okay, on a different spiritual grounds called dashabhumi in Sanskrit, right, how can we remove different is it layers of, you know, grasping and different aspects of grasping, so slowly, slowly, then we can get to number 10 or number 11, whatever that's the thing. Okay. Yeah.
So before Geshe-la was talking about direct mental perception,
right.
Coming after a direct sense
yes.
of perception.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it sort of like the object is to elongate that very short moment of mental direct perception
mm-hmm.
through the stages mm-hmm. of the five, you know, the path of accumulation,
mm-hmm.
all the way to seeing. We're at seeing
mm-hmm.
when you go into a yogic direct perception.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Korangi this with what kind of shuati. Taki kaso da ongbu musum ki and yijing musum da dan sung barwa. Ta ta da ngzo sa ka sa di ta lam ga da sa chul ja ba yina. Ta ongbu musum ku tham ge pen yijing musum sha barwa ge. Yijing musum de pa gyun chong cha ta ta da ban sa nga la ro ge. Kale kale che di pa chi zum bar bus. A di che du koro so da. Di kale kale che en nen jo musum cha ro ge. Di di chi koro so.
Re la ta ta ge da shin ba. Chena mo to ten ga ne che ge ne lu chi.
No.
제바첸 전부 니엘어 먹티 통구여스 비게 미시가 통구여스 또 미시가 통이데 제바데 무슨 거스 다티 통베다네 이고 무슨 거 코였던 게 연된당 캐주였당 내루라 제바첸 양내양도 제 양내양도 제 담바 좀마도 담바 좀나 안내 제 컨텐츠 유메 담바 뭐 좀나 아니 제 모티브에 아니 존재 타요 삼은 땅베다네 삼은 양내양도 양땅데 tela kwa nye yungu yores, dambwa ma zhugla kwa nye yin, tanga kwa nye yin yige lo, di yiji rida yores. Ani kwa nye we tene yangja yana yanda jewa cha yana yanda jewa tende, kwa nye ya de kwa de, pa lo, kwa de nye ya pegi tinge nilu de, ya doya, dogo ya, kore lo, di dogo ya ngol dugo yore, di dogo ya ngol dugo jeba rida yores. Di jeba diga yang yu yin de yana yanda kumdi de su tunji de saya zhugu yores yana. Tunji cha de yung jing tunji sen, tunji ta de saya sun nian jiong sun wofa zhuya res, do si jimba jing zhuwa de res.
Tang azu dana digi, de rup zi bina ta lam ga ta sa chulu jana, ta yin chi cha ta nian
zhuwa 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 zhuwa.
As I was trying to explain to you before, let's say if we want to realize the emptiness of this cup, okay. First, we have to see the cup. Right? We are dealing with emptiness of the cup. So this is where the sensory direct perception perceives the cup, and that might induce in our mind this image of the cup, right? So we know, okay, what cup looks like. We see, okay, I see a cup. Yeah, that's the mental perception, right? I doesn't think I see a cup, you know. It's the mind that sees, okay, I see a cup. Yeah, yeah. So how that is the direct sensory direct perception induces the mental direct perception, okay? And now, here, we can mentally engage with emptiness of this cup, right? We say, you know, this cup does not exist in and of itself. It's not truly existent. Why can't it exist truly? You know, what are the reasons? You go through that, right? And then you say, okay, so it is empty of true existence. You know, what does that mean? You know, so you kind of investigate this whole matter and analyze this whole issue. As we are doing that, and we get a better sense of the emptiness of the cup, this is what we call mental engagement or the yichu we talk about, right? So then again, we said, okay, this is still not the understanding or the realization of emptiness. It's like a sense of what emptiness is. Yeah. So then we still familiarize our mind and we continue with the investigation analysis. And this mental engagement can give rise to the inferential valid understanding of the emptiness of the cup, right? Which is still seeing the emptiness of the cup through its own image, the image of the emptiness. Okay? So this is the right understanding of the emptiness of the cup. Now still we want to get rid of that generality, the image of the emptiness, right? We don't want this intermediary thing. We really want to experience it nakedly or whatever it is, right? So through this process, that as we do meditation, as we succeed in removing that, you know, generic image of the emptiness of the cup, now we see the emptiness directly, which is the direct perception or the valid perception of the emptiness of the cup. And that has arisen through meditation, so it really becomes a yogic direct perception, right? So all of these things we're explaining can be explained in the context of the five paths, from the path of accumulation to the path of no more learning, or on the 10 spiritual grounds from the ground number 1 to the 10. Okay? So we are going through these paths and grounds. What is really happening is this is what we are doing. You know, we are going through this whole process.
Okay. 단대티 동미도베 아니 이주다 아니 즉 제바다 웅숨데 람응알파 자외나 가적도 연구여라서나 동미도베 아니 즉 그게 이주다 당 동미도베 아니 제바데 다 장생 팔라파 자외나 장세 옹부 띄울 제가 인스 장세 옹부 띄울 자외나 동미도베 아니 즉 그게 동미라 코 장의 이주디 비길려야 아니 즉 좌람당 자데 가서서는 좌람 고수 연구여레스 좌람 고수 동이 되베 아니 즉 제바디 응 그게 양 좌랑 것을 연구여레스 응 동이 되베 아니 로 웅숨디 그게 토랑 것을 연구여레스
So now if I relate what I just explained really directly to say the five paths here, now I'm going to use you know bodhisattva with what we call low faculty. Okay, so in other words, excuse me, not so smart bodhisattvas. I'm relatively speaking, they are really smart, but you know. You know, but among them, there are those who are a little less smart. Okay, so we call them bodhisattvas with low faculty. You know, we are not trying to undermine them, but that's the language we have. So when we mentally engage with the emptiness of any phenomenon, whatever it is, right, we have a sense of what that emptiness is through analysis and everything. This is like a bodhisattva on the path of accumulation. You have a sense of what that emptiness is. You don't have the realization, right? You have... Then you further your analysis, investigation, and now that, you know, gives rise to the inferential valid understanding of emptiness. So this is like a bodhisattva of a low faculty on the path of preparation. Okay? So you have understanding of emptiness now. It's not just a sense of emptiness. Okay? Then you further your analysis and meditation, everything. Now you see your emptiness directly and nakedly. This is the bodhisattva on the path of seeing or the darshan mark, see? Okay? So this is how it connects to the paths level.
What did that Luri do with an Jebasing the Tat? Tongu so Jebasing Tandetis that you Nelu Goku Rilia and Jig Junzinetan and Tong Yedulutan that Jebasing that there is the Jebati, Junzi and Dalatin Gavore Matoji, Junzin Tasaji and Junzi Yelamayata, Junzi Tanantin, then could lot the town to Gumaris.
So the inferential valid understanding or the perception that I have been seeing, you know, kind of reciting like a mantra here, it has to arise based upon valid reasons, okay, unmistaken reasons. It can arise based upon half-baked kind of a reason, or kind of so-so, kind of, you know, no, the kind of is not good enough here, or, you know, about like 50% right, no. It has to be based upon really what we call... If there's such thing as absolutely correct reasoning, is this is what it really gives rise to inferential valid understanding of phenomena, including, you know, emptiness. Okay. So this has to come through analysis and examinations and all that, you see.
What are the life experiences, what you learn from life experiences, where does that come in here? Because you certainly can be, you know, learn something really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Is that valid? I mean, you see some young person die,
mm-hmm.
you learn a lot about emptiness.
Okay.
That seems like the fast track to get through the doses.
Okay. So whereas the life experiences fit into here, sometimes it seems like, you know, a certain event happens and that teaches us a lot, like that kind of thing, right? So a young person dies and maybe that teaches you about impermanence of life or emptiness. That's what you said. Okay, where does that fit in? Then zamzam la bena ngazu mizi chowa nyamnyong ki kenji kodosh te adu asro wa ta bena tosan baja ngwashen bada shibi ina di ki da chi karso mida ba ro wagen la kowa chaya la wadinde. Yama kurang ta tongyi la sunga. Tende yungu ta an di ta kandes deshe gyago orso. Ta pe shibu zik tanda di ngazu gyun kyong na shibu che kwa shiga ro wagen. Yama zamza tosan baja li adu wa tingin shoksha ro wadinde chung chisha yadinde yoro wa. Che mizi shibu che di ki kenji na chi mida ba ro kowa chaya la wadinde ta tongyi la wadinde ro wadi.
The others. Metavalia, energy, quotati, matta, quotati, towards Mavala, Lassan Tangumaris. She tangan, Metawa, Tik Tondak in the Hama when you quota madrina, me energy, Pungo, Michu, and the Tesson, and show Metaw Tangumaris, does
all.
That show Metaw's star, and Metaw was singing down, show Metaw sing to that den. And to live quoting Metazola, and she show Metaw Nashak into Jimahum Lassan, she me, she was she, and Pungo to the tongue down, me Pungo Cheto on Lassan. Show me that thing it is. The yard is what that devil there would be. Take time with this.
So, where does, let's say we assume that such things happen, you know, what really is happening is that we should have, if you will, a prior understanding of what impermanence is. So, certain events like that, you know, you witness somebody die, you know, then that somehow, I should say, sharpens your understanding or it induces that, you know, understanding. Otherwise, you see, the kind of thing I would say, like, you know, otherwise, like somebody who is clueless about impermanence, you know, if that person sees the house collapse or, you know, so then should gain that realization, that wouldn't happen. So we, from the Buddhist perspective, we have to have some understanding of what impermanence is or whatever the reality we are dealing with, you know. So then what could happen is, as we go through the life experiences, certain life experience might accentuate, right, become a very powerful conditioning factor that pushes, you know, or that brings your understanding, you know, more sharply, and things like that could happen, you know.
What in the way, me, and the Shine, and the Pumbu Keto, the Ton, and the Nine, imagine my figure is some, this is the temper, and the show me that would ten stigmatis, show me that would ten sad, if you get Shine, that Nine, and she, and that Pinachin to add it, that is something that one is never missing what I yet.
So what I also want to say here is, let's say, you know, we see a body, right, being carried away or removed, right? And that says, you know, oh my gosh, one day I'm going to die too. But this is not what we really exactly call understanding emptiness or really, you know, understanding death or dying. Yeah. But, you know, if that's kind of a seeing a body being carried away or removed, it says, you know, oh, one day I'm going to die like that. So I really need to be, you know, how to say, improve myself better. I need to do whatever things beneficial to the community or others help, you know, so that I lead my life more meaningfully, because after all, I don't know when I'm going to die. That is more closer to the understanding of what we call death and dying and impermanence. So that kind of, in other words, what I'm trying to say is, seeing that kind of thing should affect us positively, so that we bring some positive, you know, changes within ourselves. Not simply thinking that, oh, one day I'm going to die too, you know. But that's, you know, that's not what we call, you know, understanding death and dying or impermanence.
So something that we tell them that now, I mean, that way, the past that the future, that the time that the past will show us, because we see what's on, what's wrong, what we do, what's wrong, 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 what's wrong.
What I also want to say is that, generally speaking, seems like unlikely for any of us to have this strong, how should I say, sense of understanding of death and dying and impermanence simply seeing a dead body, okay, or simply seeing somebody die. But it is possible that, provided that in our previous lifetimes we have gained so much familiarity with understanding emptiness, things like that, Then if we are carrying what we call very rich imprints in our mind, the latencies we call pakcha in our mind of understanding emptiness, then it is possible under certain circumstances that simply seeing, you know, a dead body could really, you know, be such an instrumental factor that it can generate strong understanding of emptiness. Okay. But then again, although we haven't done anything in this life, but we have to really understand this is something we're carrying from the past lives, you know, understanding of emptiness and familiarization. So maybe ordinarily speaking, seeing a dead body or even talking about death is not something considered good or positive or interesting, you know. But from Buddhist perspective, you know, we see that, you know, it may be, you know, not a bad to witness somebody dying or a dead body, because then it really reminds us about the transitory nature of our own life and our own, you know, body. So it connects us with the reality, you know, that is. So that's why in Tibet, you know, there were cremation sites where sometimes practitioners purposely visit them. They go to the cremation, you know, grounds to see the dead bodies being disposed of or, you know, cremated or whatever the whole process they go through, so that, you know, it really helps you to develop your spirituality and your understanding of these realities that we all have to face, you know, one day. And also, you know, for example, the Tibetans also believe that if you dream about, you know, death or like somebody getting sick, sometimes we feel like maybe that is a good sign that, let's say if you dream about your, you know, say your close friend or mom or dad die in your dream, then sometimes feel like, well, maybe that might somehow get rid of the obstacle and that your mom and dad might live longer even. Okay? So there are different ways of looking at some of these things, you know, and you know, from Buddhist perspective.
Yes.
So then one of the perceptions we talked about is called subsequent perception, cheshe. Okay. Now, this is a case where it could be both conceptual or it could be non-conceptual perception. Here's an example. Let's say we have a direct perception of emptiness as it is. The first moment of that perception is called direct valid perception, okay, pramana, okay, sema in Tibetan. Then the second moment of that perception is called subsequent perception, cheshe. What it really does is it is recognizing what has already been cognized. Okay, so it's like, you know, you are re-realizing what you have realized already, cheshe. Okay, you are like recognizing, right? You already cognized or understood it, but re-understanding it in some sense, right? Recognizing it. It's not recognition, recognizing it. That's what I'm trying to say. So it can be conceptual subsequent perception, or it can be non-conceptual subsequent perception.
What does on the ane? Tong me ane chig musung ngo kiwe cheshi yaris. Depena chig miki. Ane chig kab tela ane chig mog tela tewa na teta tu ane pige mog tong ye ge ane thangbo shewa kiji thangbo ti ane chamaris. Ane kiji ngale kigme ane kiji ane chig pige nyobu penche te cheshi yaris. Lo kiji thangbo tokbe ane thane ane te
So here's an example of subsequent perception that is what we call non-conceptual or direct. Let's talk about, let's say, a visual perception of this cup. And that visual perception is going to stay for five moments. The first moment is called the direct valid perception or the tsema. Then the next second to the fifth moment, these are called subsequent direct perceptions of the cup. Okay, what these perceptive moments are doing is they are re-perceiving what has already been perceived, okay, by the previous moments. So that is the same line of thinking we can apply to inferential valid cognition of a phenomenon. Let's say even inferential valid cognition is going to stay for 5 minutes, at the 5 moments actually. The first moment itself is what called inferential valid cognition, but the second moment to the fifth moment are called the subsequent, inferential valid inferential cognitions. Yes. So the mindfulness, it can also be in the nature of subsequent perceptions, okay? Or it could be in the nature of mental, what called engagement. So every mindfulness or recollection is not a case of that, but there could be instances of recollection of mindfulness, tempa, that are in the nature of subsequent perceptions or in the nature of mental engagement.
Yes.
So then I've already explained to you yichu, or mental engagement, is translated as, where it is really not the real understanding of a phenomenon or a reality, but it is like through analysis and examination, we get a really good sense of what it is. Okay, that good sense of what it is a mental engagement. So now how does that apply to ourselves, our practice? We as ordinary beings are cultivating great love, mahamaitri, great compassion, mahakaruna, bodhicitta, bodhisattva's attitude. But the kind of, the love, compassion, and bodhicitta that we are cultivating, they're more in the form of what we call mental engagements. Okay, it's a sense of what it is. I think it's not the real one that we have,
So
di thangpa nying de yishu cha de so ki ngad ta da for example, you know, the way we cultivate greater compassion is we have to reflect on the sufferings of other sentient beings. And there are three types of suffering. And for example, the most important one that we really need to understand, if you will, is the pervasive suffering, and it has subtleties. So we as ordinary beings really don't know ins and outs of the suffering, if you will, especially the pervasive suffering. We might have a sense of it. Because of that sense of it, the compassion that is being induced by that sense of suffering is also a sense of compassion. It's a mental engagement. Okay. And then one of the perceptions, our category of perception that we talked about is called Nangla Mangeba. Nangla means something appears to your mind, but you really don't cognize it or you don't ascertain it. Okay, Nangla Mangeba. And it is a non-conceptual perception, which means it's free of conceptuality, as I mentioned before. And it is unmistaken perception in the sense that So it is unmistaken with regard to its appearing object. Remember, a direct perception is free of conceptuality and unmistaken with regard to its appearing object. Okay. So Nangla Mangeba, the kind of perceptions to which things appear to, but they really don't cognize them, are direct perceptions free of conceptuality but unmistaken with regard to their appearing objects. Here's an example that when I look at my cup, my eyes or my visual consciousness can see the cup, you know, the size, the color, and the design. But there are things about the cup, the characteristics of the cup, such as impermanence of the cup, or that the cup is a product, you know, it's produced by cause and condition. Those things appear to my visual consciousness, but my visual consciousness does not register the impermanence of the cup, or the cup is a product. Okay, and so which is a case of like how those qualities or the characteristics of the cup are appearing to my visual consciousness, but my visual consciousness is not ascertaining them.
Okay.
What? At this point, we are not necessarily saying it is a doubt. It may give rise to a doubt, which will be a conceptual state of mind, but it is that we are talking about the direct perception, how things may appear to it, but it may not, you know, ascertain them. So it's like the impermanence of the cup appears to our visual consciousness, but it does not seize it, you know.
Is it only subtle things?
Chidu kala ya ane kayo daga sore tanda nangla mangi me chidu pana kayo la kengi tanda mita wa jau ruwa ti chidu kala ita chawe ni chidu kesi gor ba sore. Yes, it is, yes, subtle things, yes. Yeah, impermanence of the cup is a subtle aspect of the cup.
Or the nation is. Ane thaga nation ki bhi ke thaki nangla mangi ane yongya bine chi changsing salam thongyo kuliya nangla mangi yongyo res. Karasana chi
So this kind of a category of direct perceptions, which we call nala mangeba, means things appearing to them, but you don't really see them or you cognize them. This not only exists in us ordinary beings, but this could also exist at a very higher level, bodhisattvas on a very higher spiritual levels. Okay? For example, bodhisattvas on higher spiritual levels of the paths, or the grounds, we say, what they're really pursuing is the omniscient mind. Okay, that's what they want, right? They want to become Buddhas, omniscient mind. But they may be able to perceive the subtle impermanence of the omniscient mind. Not only it appears to their consciousness, they perceive it because of their level, but still they may not understand all the qualities of the omniscient mind because they are still beyond them. Okay? So the subtle qualities of the omniscient mind itself appears to their perception, but they really do not really understand the omniscient mind, you know, everything about omniscient mind. Okay? So that is the case of you know, how this kind of perception could exist at a very high level as well. The bodhisattvas on high ground. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
So this would be, you know, conventional and ultimate reality and a non-perception of ultimate reality?
Yes,
I mean, from Buddhist point of view, that phenomena can be categorized into two types, conventional reality or truths, or phenomena, or ultimate reality or truths, called Paramartha Satya and Samvritta Satya. But within each category, there are phenomena of subtleties. Okay, so even in the world of conventional realities, there are many subtle things. So this is a case where omniscient mind itself is a conventional phenomenon or reality. But it appears to the minds of bodhisattvas on higher levels, it appears to their mind, but they may not necessarily cognize what omniscient mind is. Okay? So we are still in the realm of conventional reality.
Yes.
So let's assume that a bodhisattva on a higher ground perceives certain impermanence as it is directly. Okay? As far as that realization, the perception goes, that seeing the subtle impermanence exactly as the omniscient mind sees it, there's no difference. Okay, Buddha sees subtle impermanence, and here the bodhisattva sees exactly. So there's no difference between them. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, Buddha is at the highest level, and bodhisattvas are still pursuing it. So then there are many qualities of the Buddha which may appear to the minds of the bodhisattvas, but still they don't really cognize them. So omniscient mind itself is such a case. Okay. And I mean, this in Buddhism, what we talk about is when we look at the spiritual grounds from the 1 to the 10, right? One is the lowest one, then the second one, and third one, it goes up. What's really happening is those who are on the lower spiritual grounds, you know, many qualities of the higher spiritual grounds may appear to their minds, but they really do not cognize them. Whereas those on the higher grounds, they could not only perceive, right, things appear to their mind about the qualities of the lower ground, but they really see them exactly as they are. Okay, because that's the, you know, level difference of realizations. Okay, and now I give this example, right? For example, like, I don't know about English. That's Kishila himself talking about. Okay, so he said, if somebody asked me, okay, who speaks better English here? Who knows about the English grammars? Or who is, you know, pronouncing things well? Well, I can't answer that. Okay, because of my level, right? I don't know. So you can't ask me and get answer for this part, right? So it is the same way. You see, the lower level bodhisattvas, you know, they do not have many qualities that the higher level bodhisattvas have. So certain qualities of the higher level bodhisattvas may appear to their minds, but they may not necessarily perceive them. Whereas the higher level bodhisattvas, not only things of the lower level bodhisattvas appear to their minds, but they also perceive them. Okay. So that's how does this connect to our practice level, if you ask, in Buddhism. This is why we said it is always, you know, good thing to cultivate what we call appreciation and pure perception of other people and qualities. Okay? And because we don't know who is who. Okay. And if you go being very judgmental about others, as if we know everybody else, or we are on a higher ground, as if we see everybody down there, right, we could make a terrible mistake. Because as we talked about from this morning, there are a lot of distorted perceptions inside us, okay, biased attitudes and perceptions. So because of that, you see, we could be really making wrong judgments about other people. Okay, so the best thing is try to cultivate pure perceptions of others. So it's very safe and you appreciate it. Even if you couldn't do that, at least do not find faults in others. You know, do not badmouth about others. We really don't know. Those others could be on a higher level and you don't know, or we don't know. Okay, so that's how it connects us to the practice level. Okay. So then one of the category of minds we mentioned earlier is called the doubt, or thesum in Tibetan, right? It's the doubting mind. So the doubting mind with regard to any phenomenon is that it's not really not able to decide whether it is or it is not. You know, it's kind of dwindling between two sort of options, if you will. You know, it's a kind of oscillating mind between two, you know, sides here. So doubt is a conceptual state of mind, right? Let's say if I look at this cup and I can see with my eyes, you know, the size of the cup, the color of the cup, everything. Now, if that gives rise to my mind, you know, what company made it, produced this one? That's another different level of thought, isn't it? And then I think maybe there are two companies I know of, like which one really made this cup, right? I'm not sure. I'm saying maybe it could be company A or the company B, but I really am not sure. Okay, so that is a doubting mind, right?
What did that sort of new you know? And a sort of tongue button at that tongue, Nigeria, sort of tongue button, say, shall you know? And a good lot top of the time, that on the test on the time, that sort of new within a page, sir, my daughter, this seller, lot in.
So the doubt is really interesting thing to look at. You know, let's say I'm doubting about, you know, what two companies I know have made this cup. Let's assume one of the two made it, okay? So company A and B, this label. So actually the one who really made this cup is the company A. But in my mind, I think it really seems to be likely the company B made it. If that's my doubt, then this kind of doubt is tending more towards the error side. Okay? Whereas, if I think maybe the company A made it, which it is, right? But I'm still not sure, this is called doubt tending towards the factual things. It's more closer to the fact, right? Because that's closer to the truth. So this kind of a doubt, which is more tended towards the fact, this can easily give rise to the correct perception and, you know, the right perception. So let me connect this more to the practice, you know, level. Let's say, you know, we're thinking about a law of karma and its outcomes, right? And so we hear about this, okay, good karmas produce good results and bad karmas produce bad results. We are really not sure about it. And then in our own mind, you know, sometimes we decide, you know, well, this all is just, you know, makes no sense. You know, I don't think really such things exist. You know, but you're really not sure, but we are more doubting, but I don't think this, you know, is the case, then this doubt is more inclined towards the error side, okay? So this can easily turn into wrong perceptions or the distorted perception, loksha, okay? Because you are really in the neighborhood here of the wrong perceptions. But somehow you think, well, I think it somehow makes sense. You know, if you're nice and kind to people, you know, people are happy, you're happy, you know, things seem to be really working out fine. If you're unkind to people, then this kind of messes up here. And I kind of think, like, okay, this karma thing seems to be making sense. So you doubt more towards the fact of the matter, right? Then this kind of, you are in the neighborhood of the, you know, wrong, of the right way of thinking. So this can really produce or lead to the right way of thinking. You know.
That has on all luxuries. Luxuries are that time and what they call the college, Gisha Mone and Tangzi, Maribe Tang and Maribe Tangzi Maribe, the Lord Luxury, two changes, Kur Tangbe and Lotozo and Cotta Jap Hondong Agelas of the Tamalo and Lotua, Shivila and Chitin, Lotian, Lot Luxis and did it to yours. Tangaranzi Gilia and Lotua Mango to get to you, Tangi Mango Sierra, Lotua on going to yours, Lot Luxury to Dago.
So I believe out of the seven categories of the minds that we kind of presented earlier, I think maybe the last one is the we call loksha, distorted perceptions or the wrong consciousnesses, loksha. And of course, the number one distorted perception I, highlighted before is our grasping at self. Okay, that's just the worst kind of a distorted perception here. So any other states of mind which is encouraged by the grasping at self or induced by it, such as attachment, anger, jealousy, arrogance, you know, da-da-da-da-da, all of these are distorted perceptions, you know. And so why they are distorted perceptions? Because they are mistaken with regard to their conceptual objects. Remember, we laid out four types of objects. They are mistaken with regard to their conceptual objects, attachment, anger, hatred, jealousy, you know, arrogance, and all of that. And so these are all distorted in that sense.
Yes.
The whole point of, you know, presenting this like elaborate explanation system of mind in Buddhism is that so that we are able to recognize the distorted perceptions, you know, and what kind of causes and conditions produce them, you know, how do they really relate to their objects? How do they perceive their objects? Can we do anything with them? You know, are there any other antidotes or states of mind we could generate to counteract them and get rid of them? That's the whole purpose behind Buddhist presentation of the science of the mind, you know, if you will. And as I mentioned earlier also, that today Many contemporary scientists, such as neuroscientists and the psychologists, and they're also taking interest in Buddhist explanation of the mind. And I think they also share to some extent that we really need to know about the biases that we have inside us, then how can we correct those biases so that we really perceive the realities of things more correctly, if you will. So when we talk about distorted perceptions, of course, we can talk about, you know, what we call the non-conceptual distorted perceptions and conceptual distorted perceptions. This is like, you know, whole Pandora box here. We can open it up. And then we can say, okay, how does the distortions happen? You know, what causes are really are there? And then, for example, say when we're really speeding up in our car, right, it seems like everything else is moving along with, you know, the trees are also seems to be walking or running if you really speed up that much. And but which case the trees are not walking, they are not speeding up, you are one. But really what's happening is this distorted perception we have, the error, the cause of the error is in the environment, as we would say. Okay, so we can find out where can we find the causes of errors or the distortions, whether it's the environment or whether it's something to do, you know, inside us or where else. So in the Buddhist texts, you know, they give many examples about, you know, one of the examples of a cause of error that exists in the environment is when you see mirage as water, right? Of course, in the Buddhist explanation, we talk about this condition, there has to be sand grains, that is the sun is shining on the sand grain, and then it looks like the water is there. Well, I think in California, we don't need to find sand. Like, we see it on our road, freeways all the time. Like, there is mirage, water over there. So then we see water, but there's no water. So that's a distorted perception. So where is the cause of that distortion and error? It is in the environment.
Yes.
In the case of conceptual distorted perceptions, a lot of the time this has to do with distorted predispositions or latencies placed on our mind, in the seeds of the distortion, you know, by previous thoughts and concepts, you know. When they planted those distorted seeds in our mind, then these are messing up, and then we get, you know, distorted conceptual, you know, perceptions.
So
how does that connect to our everyday life experience or the Buddhist, you know, practice guide tell us? You know, it is like, because now if we see, you know, something wrong in another person or somebody's making, you know, thing, then we say, wait a minute, is this a case where the person is really making a mistake or wrong, or is it a case that it's my distorted perception that's messing up here? Okay, so you do not quickly jump at and point your finger at someone, you know, you're making a mistake, because it could very well be that it's our own distorted conceptual minds that, you know, is messing up our perception, and maybe the person is not doing anything wrong or does not have those faults we think this person has. Okay, so this is how we bring it into practice, because the fact of the matter is, we have less of the valid perceptions, we have more of the distorted perceptions inside us. That being the case, you know, we have so many distorted perceptions inside us, there is more likelihood and a chance that what we really see, the wrong thing in the other person, is more of our own reflection of the mind rather than what the person is doing or not, see. So this is how we bring it into practice. Say, no, wait a minute. I'm not going to rush here and say anything bad. You know, keep your mouth shut and just, you know, wait and think through. Okay? Take this example, like someone we hate like anything, okay? And when we look at this person, we don't see anything good in this person. From the tip of his hair to down to the, you know, sole of the feet, this person's gone wrong, absolutely, you know, negative. There's nothing good about this. How can this be, really? You know, because we really don't, like, we have so much distorted perceptions and thoughts inside us, so many negative imprints we carried from many previous thoughts, that now we're really projecting everything onto this person, and we see this person absolutely evil, you know. So now we ask that question to ourselves, you know, is it true that this person I call enemy number one is from head to the toe, is the evil number one, nothing good about this person? Is that really the fact of the matter or the truth of love? Well, now we analyze and kind of think about this, we have gone wrong in our perception of this person. You know, the person cannot be absolutely evil and, you know, all things gone wrong with this person. So when we have such a negative view of the perception of this person, then all our reactions to the person is going to be negative, right? Something we are going to say is not going to be nice and clean. You know, it's going to be really, you know, what we call a foul mouth. Everything comes out of our mouth about this person is going to be really, you know, smell or sting like anything. And then if we do something physically, we might just end up a punch this person or whatever the harm we could bring to this person, we might do it. And mentally, we are so angry and upset. We just have this malicious thing that, you know, how best can I, you know, teach this person a lesson or whatever the case. You see, all our body spirit might have messed up now, you know, because of this negative perception of this person. So then let's say, I mean, that's the case, and then we say something bad to this person. Of course, the person is not going to be tolerant and understanding. He or she is going to say something bad to us. Well, this gives us the perfect justification. That's, you see, I know this person is absolutely evil, and this is the perfect evidence here, you know. He is really evil. You know, now that makes us more angry and more mad with this person, and then more negative thoughts arise in our mind, and now we really exaggerate the whole image of the person even furthermore. Okay? And that's how, you see, comes out. And of course, so when you really, you get so mad and out of control, that could affect your body elements and physique, you know. So some people couldn't handle the situation and they faint, you know. So in Buddhism we say, when you really, all these distorted perceptions kind of arise so strongly, they could have so much effect on your health and physicality and elements, that it can really mess up, disrupt your harmony of your elements, and then you might even, because you couldn't do anything, so you just faint, because you want to kill this person or something, whatever it is, it's not working out. So basically, your own, the strength of the negative mind knocks you out, you know.
Nangjo 유구토네 섬데 편을 쉬게 된다는데 요 말스데 싱데
So in Buddhism, in the many Buddhist authentic texts, they talk about how if we understand our mind and if we can train our mind and control our mind, then that could, you know, through that we can also affect our physical, you know, body and its elements. But by changing our body, we cannot really change our mind or control our mind. You know, by making all kinds of, you know, changes with our body, that is not necessarily bring about changes with mind. Okay. So in Buddhism it says, you see, the mind has the power to change, you know, you, and, you know, even affect your, you know, physical constituents of the body. But simply changing with your body or its constituents, you cannot really affect change with your mind. Okay, and then some people still debate, you know, what? Now, how about you drink like, you know, hell, and then you really, you seem to have really more courage to say the things you wouldn't say, you know? So what about that? That's a really, that's, you know, what is happening is because of the close connection between mind and the body, because the body is the basis for the mind to be able to function, because now your basis itself is somehow under the strong influence, so that's why the mind is not working properly. But this is not a case of how, you know, changing the body is affecting so much, how to say, the transforming your mind. Of course, because of the close connection between body and mind, as I was explaining to you, that when we talk about tactile consciousness, the body sense faculty, it kind of pervades your whole body system, right, as we say, from the head to the toe. In the same way, the mental consciousness and its mental sense faculty, it also pervades your whole body system. So because of that, you know, close connecting link, when we, you know, if our body doesn't feel comfortable or in things like that, of course it will have certain effect on the mind. But this is very different from how we say, by the power of the body, we can change the mind. No, it's the other way around. By the power of the mind, we can change, bring changes to the body even. Okay. So in short, in conclusion, what I want to say is I want to really give you this nice conclusion to our special teaching here, is that the whole point of studying about the mind and the Dharma and all those things is that what we are really hoping to do is bring about inner transformation. And what that involves is that first we hope, like, we generate, you know, doubting mind. So we want it to be more tended towards the fact or the factual doubting mind. Are you with me? More tended towards the fact rather than to the error side. So when that happens and then we investigate matter further in something, that might help us to generate the mental engagement, which is the sense of what it is. Right? So then we do further analysis and things like that, and we're able to generate the inferential valid understanding of things and realities. Then through meditation practice, we want to transform that into direct valid perceptions or the non, you know, conceptual valid perceptions. Then we slowly want it to bring to the ultimate level and change that into the omniscient mind. Okay? So that's the way process we want to go through, and that's where we want to be. Okay? I think that's a such a wonderful conclusion.
Yeah.
All right, we will stop there. And wow, it has been quite a meaningful day, but a long day. Let's do the... Yes, one question, yeah.
What happens to the mind of psychiatric patients, and how can one help?
That's symptom of your work in Mengang. This is what I'm going to do with this. Symptom of the mind of Mengang case, you do with the way.
That's 신소 랑송 말씀하시는 것도 남지 뒤에 나는 때는 다 시와 정신이 만나어도 자고 열한
네네
다 시와 정신이 만나어도
로바한테서 어떻게
도절라 딱 지단 것터네고 과대째네 아니 직차하고 딱 직대로 내대어서 뒤에 나는 있는 도저 제가 라치게 직차사도 내어다 그런 믹스에게 자고 시작을 열었어 이네 딱 있으면서 말씀을 해 아니 저 그게 제가 그게
So in the case of individuals in psychiatry, you know, depending upon their seriousness and the conditions, of course. But in general speaking, provided that you see their faculties are really not working well and it's gone distorted, so in many cases, there's not much we can do about them. Okay, actually in Buddhism, there is mention of like serious cases where they said in the Vinaya, Buddhist monastic discipline rules said, well, there's nothing advice you can give to them. Okay, you could help them. We don't mean like you can't help them because they still need to have basic necessities of life. You can provide them food, shelter, clothing, whatever needs, but you really cannot, right, change so much their way of thinking or give advice with, in regard to that. So these are kind of put in a very, you know, special categories or exceptions, exceptional categories. So you can help them in whatever other ways, but you cannot, you know, really correct their distortions so much.
Number two, Shunari, a Toshidan, Tabashi Shiguris, Toshidan, Menyoba, Nobasa, and the Dick Dumigi and Dick Stingo, and Saint Betty and Two Dingo, and Changi and Dick Saint Tuya, or the Toshid Tiris, Dan Yi Dan, Jing Yoba Shogatan, those two children, that Pebekan Shiguris, Shivan Simon, Pebekan Shiguris, Harasana.
In the Buddhist Vinaya text, there's mention of you know certain like the causes of you know such. How people can lose their mind, so to speak. So they talk about four major categories and four subcategories or secondary categories. You know, in the major categories, they include people who have gone crazy, okay? And or that some people, because of the tragedy or the intensity of the suffering, they couldn't handle it, so they have so much agony and, you know, a disturbed state of mind. So there are things like those mentioned in the Buddhist literature. But in a secondary category, sometimes they talk about how in a sleeping state, you could have certain distortions, you know. In the case of monks and nuns, we have so many vows to keep, you know. But sometimes in the sleeping state or the dreaming state, you know, we might find ourselves breaking our rules or things like that, you know. So those are maybe in some cases exceptional cases, you know. So things like being talked about in a Buddhist Vinaya, you know, text.
Okay.
And bodhisattvas on a higher ground, so in the first place, they even don't break their vows in the sleeping or the dream states. But if should there somehow certain issues arise, their mindfulness kicks in right away and they're able to correct it. Okay, so those are the bodhisattvas on higher grounds. Okay, one more question and then we will, yeah.
I'm wondering, I have a personal, it's something to do with a person, my grandmother used
okay.
Armenian, and I am too, and I also do the same. And I'd like to understand what is it about being able to see where a person is right now with their vision. I know that it has some, in my experience, has something to do with losing my grandmother at age 12, and then she returned back again at 18 when I was 18. And I read her cup for the first time, and I know that there's something about loss. That and the healing experience of seeing her again, that I convey to people in the sense of, if you know, I could see their vision, and so instead of seeing loss, I see
some kind of healing, gift.
A healing.
Okay.
So I don't know what the how that.
Okay. 그러나게 나는 염려 소화를 준디네 두스고로 다 갈서로 담담을 야소소여기 다치에베기 되는 파마인에 디네 즉 정벌과 정벌은 가서로 파면에 주로 적으로 지연시나 얘는 그러나게 마모모라데 로중에도 정에서로 와야 디네 즉 개발을 실행지 아마디 모처비 징서로 지디 담담을 야 로파베 사블이야 다치 갈서고래 소소리야 디인고도 스티 코 편도로 비로하게 밀리야 편도 제야라보다 소소로 힐링스 동안 소화되 가서 우리야 초답을 하지 마도 로파메디 용모디 니방기 샘기 내단 되게 되다 단다 되게 시에샤브나 가와 풍도를 쪽으로 쏟다 근데 소원님인데
어 도도 다 들로 냠뇽이야 들로 떡배모 온다고 여기서 떡배모 온다 떡고데미 야티야 네 파자 즉 그 상고지를 때는 용모 여기서 어 도도
What I can say, I mean, at the moment is, you know, such experiences, you know, they belong to conceptual, you know, consciousnesses. And they're more likely to due to what calls the positive imprints deposited on the mind by other thoughts you know, previously. You know, so due to such things, you could have such experience.
Okay. Through genetic?
Not necessarily genetic. So or that genetics are different. This is the subway. Because genetic, let me tell you, because my
wife. Oh, the mother, the genetic thing,
No, we are talking not about the genetics, but we are talking about the conceptual state of mind. You know, due to the conceptual categories of the minds and the imprints deposited by them previously, no one could, you know, have such experience. Okay. All right, thank you, everyone. Let's do the Geshe-la's quick written prayer. We will do it. We will do it in first Tibetan and then English. No Vietnamese today, I see here. I don't see many.
Yeah, bear Ramon John, Joy, 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 den den bel da den ba wo chen bo so wo de qiu gu yun den gu zo be me ni lu bu ro ji wa na be zu de ni ran zhang jia wei dian zai dian 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 ku du ji le wei du ji du ran ji wei jiang du ji ge wo ji du wei dian jian dian zhu ni du san le de Ta ni sha ra yan do me che je ye yan ju de be che me nyu ro je jo ka wa me ba na zo che je do che zu de ba ra che la yan je ge Ye Dio do ji bia chai bai cho gui do Cho ge chi ji ji bai nyu ru ji shu
Let's do in English. O infinite Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, you are the embodiment of uncontaminated and immutable great bliss. Kindly pour on us now your blessings, rains of nectar from the great clouds of your pervasive, pure, and bright wisdom and compassion to eliminate our distress. We pray to you, an incomparable great hero, who has perfectly realized within his mind the threefold ethics, a pure essence of the extensive system of Tathagata's teaching. He who has raised a parasol of Dharma in hundreds of directions. Your body is a sun of all wonderful qualities, but all of a sudden it's set into solitary peep. You have committed before infinite Buddhas to work for Dharma and sentient being. You could not have given up your commitment. However, your presence depends on the fortunes of disciples, for the power of dependent arising is inconceivable. Please reincarnate soon as a new light of Dharma, out of your compassion that never abandons us. Please return soon as a supreme spiritual guide, a treasure house of the immense teaching of Buddha, a voice that eloquently elucidates the teaching that suits individuals' dispositions and capacities. Please return soon as a great Dharma king who will be known in all directions for smashing into pieces a mountain of misguided teachings and views through the power of your thunderbolt reasoning of the three reasoning. Please return soon just like your previous self, an expert in the five major sciences of Buddhism, whose eloquent words and articulation of the teaching captivate the hearts of all the scholars and activate deep appreciation in pure enthusiastic mind. Please return soon as a spiritual guide, endowed with complete knowledge, kindness, and dedication. In regards to the perfect view, meditation, and conduct, one who facilitates the opening of the blossom lotus, that is the golden teaching of Tsongkhapa, by the power of the three infallible jewels, by the power of
Yeah, but no. je kya bo nya bo mya bo yo go ne go yo ka re ra ve go ve shin ga de be do de wa ma ne jo ve ne che re ze wa tin sin ja zo ye Shabbat Shalom, 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 Shabbat Shalom,
I want to thank Geshe-la on our behalf for such an excellent exposition of the complex world of mind in Tibetan Buddhism. And it has been a very meaningful day, especially for me, and I hope for you too. So thanks for coming. It's very wonderful to see so many of you. And see you tomorrow, hopefully, because I don't know whether I'll be here tomorrow morning. Means if I die tonight, who knows that? So we will have our regular teaching at 10:30 to 11:30, 1 hour. And Geshe-la will tell us a little bit about Buddha's deeds or the actions. And then we will set up the table and do sock offering to commemorate Buddha's birthday, Enlightenment Day, and Parinirvana Day. Okay? And so everybody is welcome to bring a lot of fruits and things to offer. Including myself, as I tell you, I'm telling myself too. Okay. So I'm in the audience. Okay. So thank you very much for a lovely day, meaningful for Sagadava and for the good requests, you know, Jim and Akiko and in others did. And I enjoyed it very much. And I hope I want to get a copy of today's whole teaching. Okay. Maybe others want to, so we can make suggested donations and get a copy. Although that's really, we still need to think about it. It's so technical and so meaningful, so... All right. Thank you. Okay, you will have access on the internet to today's teachings. Okay.
We're going to leave the cushions where they are. The only thing I'm going to ask is maybe two or three volunteers. Tomorrow's Sagadawa will probably help quite a few people, so we'll undouble them and maybe put some single rows.
Right.
Okay.
And I think we can set up tables. Don't put too many butter lamps or whatever, you know. We can have
chocolate.
It gets so hot.
Yeah. I think we'll forego that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.